Okay, we're still at five, four. Today, in the end of the month, here is the birthday today. David Oistrakh, great question, great actress, Deborah Carr, we have Suma Capote, In Cold Blood, great refugee, for survivor, concentration, Ellie Sell, woman with the most beautiful leg, Mary Bird Baxter, Nancy Dickerson, Downey Mathis, Cesar, and Robinson Crusoe. And of course, the number the fifth night off the plane, Marilyn 2. Among the deaths today, James Dean and Edgar Bergen, who father Anderson, Edgar Bergen, and Charlie Carson. Among the events today, very important, in 1452, Gutenberg produced his printed the Bible. Now, not known, very well, very little known fact that Roman Catholic Church Vatican financed Gutenberg. They saw this as a way to propagate Catholic faith. And Jack Cashel, famous author, book Hopes of Thank, he gets chronicled this. A lot of other information about the Roman Catholic Church finance, which is a hot topic of lawsuits and ongoing interest, as well as pedophiles, but also the fact of the church. Popes have always said that the wealth of the church can't be covered for the rock, dollars, the Vatican art, real estate, can't really put a value. Statues, the Sistine Chapel, and of course, the world. Among the other events today, we have the first American execution in what was the colony, a guy named John Billington, also one of the scientists. His descendants included James Garfield, president, Civil War veteran. Garfield was murdered by a federal officer. Also, I think FDR, some other American presidents, to another line, going for descendants of his family. Among the other events today, 1867, Wise moved on the part of the United States. The United States claimed Midway Island through crucial, typical World War II battle in the Pacific with Admiral Yamamoto, and second greatest military strategist decided to lure the American fleet out to destroy it. Wrong. Said his carrier, his fleet, badly damaged, all four carriers destroyed at Midway Island, States. In 1870, the first Portuguese arrived in Hawaii. In 1898, New York became established city. A guy who was considered a black man, also married to a black woman. Thank you. Hey, Bossy, ethnic challenge. Excuse me. In 1938, the Munich Agreement was signed. Chamberlain, the Prime Minister of England, Mussolini, Hitler, Gladier of France, carved up the city of Czechoslovakia, and gave it, like Germany, to take it. So it was just the beginning of what didn't happen by the response to Hitler. And another partition, 1939, Germany, agreed with Russia to partition Poland. course, later, experiments took it all. But the Russians got that after World War II. Also, another World War II, the slaughter of all these Jews and Baba Yaga, and it's Yevchenko, the Soviet poet, talked about it in his poetry sessions. And of course, he talks about one of the sentences dedicated to Baba Yaga. And in 1946, 22 Nazi leaders were convicted at Nuremberg. Of course, several of them hung to military title. Eichrecht, the lawyer from Austria, who became Gauleiter in Holland, father Eichrecht, denied public offers to stolen. Bicycle. There were several others. Of course, people like Maureen committed suicide. Donitz was the founder of Wolfpack. Admiral Rader, Donitz, several top generals, and see. Von Ribbentrop, I think, also. And let's see, and in 1954, U.S. Nautilus was born. Last week, we talked about how the Khrushchev came to the States as a guest of refugees from Soviet Russia. Picketed to get assaulted and threatened to go home. Corrupted about the sheriff. Eisenhower called to a sheriff and said, "Show me." And that's why I do it. This is what he did. Here we go.
And gratitude.
Yeah. The vilest weed. Yeah. Can we get to the lighter subject? Back to Mrs. Khrushchev. Do you remember the episode when they came here and she wouldn't get off the train? Just a little anecdotal thing.
Well, she had been. She was a sensitive lady. She was a fine lady too. She wasn't the tough person that Nikita was. he was a. He was quite a character, I must say. I enjoyed being with him for 2 weeks in the Kremlin because...
That's when you did missions for Eisenhower?
What?
When you did diplomatic missions for Eisenhower?
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah, I had been... I did quite a few like that, but... anyway, he... his wife had been insulted by a writer... for one of the newspapers, I think the New York Times, said that she didn't perform like a first lady of the USSR, but she wore black drab stockings and her dress was too plain and not sufficiently glamorous. You know. So the poor lady didn't know what to make of it. So that morning when they were coming up from Los Angeles, they came up by train, as you know. And I had built a special platform out by the SB Depot to receive them. And Henry Cabot Lodge, who was escorting Khrushchev around the country at that time, said, "Now," he says, "Mayor, you better be careful because Khrushchev is going to find some excuse and leave and go back and then blast the United States for being inhospitable." So I was quite frank with Henry Cabot Lodge, who was a fine gentleman. I said, "Well, look, Ambassador," I call him Ambassador because at that time he was Ambassador to the United Nations. I said, if he leaves, why doesn't he leave from Los Angeles? I don't want to leave from San Francisco. You know, he said, we're on our way. He phoned me right from the train. We'll be there about 11 o'clock, he said. 10:30, 11 o'clock. Fine. So I called my florist immediately. I got him out of bed. I said, why don't you go down to the store and get four dozen beautiful red roses and have them ready for me. So in the meantime, I had called all the police back. No policeman had a day off. Some in plain clothes, most of them in uniform. And so here I am waiting now with my wife, and she had the roses. And Henry Cabot Lodge said, if you'll do all the, let me do all the talking, he said, because every place, all these mayors, wherever we go, they always say something and we get into trouble. And I said, well, no. I said, Ambassador, I don't think I want to do that. He says, well, why not? I said, well, to be frank with you, I said, so far you're not doing too well. So I said, what you're going to do is let me do the talking in my own stupid way. I said, and then if he leaves, it's my fault, because if he leaves and it's your fault, I'll still have to take the blame, but I can't say it's not my fault. It's Henry Cabot Lodge's fault. Well, he says, you got a point there. So Khrushchev came out of the train with Henry Cabot Lodge. I greeted him. Well, I tried to greet him, but I put my hand out just this far to see if he would reach for it, but he didn't do it. Yeah, he didn't do it. He was still mad, seething mad. Oh, my God, he was absolutely mad. But Mrs. Khrushchev didn't come out. She was still in the train. So I kind of killed a little time, try to be a little, with a little levity, a little casualness, but I wasn't getting very far. So finally I decided I'd have to take a high risk, because if he was going to leave, I might as well get it over with. So I said to him, Mr. Chairman, I said, he'd like to be called Mr. Chairman, I've determined that. I said, can you tell me, please, where the big boss is? Oh, my God. Poor Henry Cabot Lodge almost went through the floor. He almost dropped dead. That was the end of it, you know. So Khrushchev himself got a little excited. He said, what do you mean? What do you mean? I says, just between you and me, I said, I want you to know that everybody in San Francisco thinks I'm the big boss. He says, I'm not. I said, you know who the big boss is? He said, who? I said, see that lady over there with the big bunch of red roses? She's the big boss. I said, everybody in the Soviet Union thinks you're the big boss, but the big boss really is still in the train, and we're not going to leave here until she comes out. Well, by golly, that broke the ice, you know. He looked at me. All of a sudden, he had a big grin. He put his hand out. We shook hands. He says, you're all right. He says, you're different. Yeah. And poor Henry Cabot Lodge was appeased, you know. So she came out, then he went in and got her, brought her out. I had an extra car for her and my wife and brought her. But the one thing that really helped, because I was the only mayor that he invited to be his guest in Russia. But you know how they work it. They don't issue the invitation and say, first they ask you through some ambassador, if you are invited, would you accept? You see, they can't afford to have a rejection, you see. And then if you say yes, well then they issue the invitation. Well, they asked me the question. I said, certainly I'd accept. I said, and as a result, all the San Francisco press came along with me. They paid their way, but the, but the papers paid their way. So they asked me, and I went. But the thing that really made me, put me in a better position was when we were at the Mark Hopkins Hotel. That's where we had a special suite for them up there. And that morning, I put a telephone call in to Russia to see how their daughter was doing, because she was going to have a baby. She was pregnant, you see. And in those days, you couldn't get a telephone call in 10 minutes like we do now. You had to wait 3 or 4 or 5 hours. So as a result, I put the call in about 11 o'clock that morning, found out the lady had been given, the baby had arrived, 7 pounds of this and that and all that. And I broke the news to Mrs. Khrushchev, and she cried my shoulder, you know. And she said, thank you. Спасибо.
Speak Russian, too.
Yeah. And when the press asked me later what the story was about, I said, well, I said, you have to bear in mind that grandmothers are the same all over the world. I don't care what color they are, black, white, pink, blue, yellow. Grandmothers are grandmothers. And all I did was to accord her the courtesy of apprising her that her daughter had given birth. I said, even a lion cub will attack you and tear you to pieces if you try to touch one of its cubs, you see. Even a lioness, I said, would do that. So I think she appreciated it. And as a result, I was invited, and they spent 2 weeks with them. And I was in his private plane, and the press, so I always insisted that the press be accorded the privilege too. I didn't want to
slight them.
I didn't want to slight them, but I just didn't want them to think I was hiding something too. So they had every benefit of going where I was going. And only one time, well, a couple of times, I wanted to go to church, and young Gromyko was assigned as my personal guide.
And he was the foreign minister.
What?
He was the foreign minister at the time, Gromyko?
No, his son.
Oh, okay.
His son, yeah. His son was my guide, and he says, well, I don't go to church. That's okay. He says, I'll take a cab, and I'll go there myself. Oh, he said, the boss told me to be with you. So we went to church, and they had a big ceremony there. It was a
Russian Orthodox.
Yeah. I was surprised to see all these churches created into museums, changed. And when we went down to Tbilisi, this was an interesting thing. They gave us a big reception there. But on the way back, we ran into some turmoil, bad weather. And this was about 1 o'clock. Or 12 o'clock midnight. The plates were coming out of the shelves in the plane. The plane was shaking up. So finally, and a heavy rain, a tremendous rain. So finally, about 2 o'clock, we landed in some place we didn't know where we were. So, and there were four cars out there when we landed. And I said to Gromyko, where are we? He says, I don't know. I said, well, okay, we'll take care of that later. And the mayor was there. The mayor of the town was there. So we all got out in big umbrellas and got into the cars. They brought me to the mayor's house where we slept. And they brought the press down to the hotel, not too far away, to spend the night, because the next morning at 7 o'clock we had to move on. So when I arrived at the mayor's house, I said to Gromyko again, where are we? He says, I don't know. So I said, well, now we're going to have a little trouble. See? So I sat down with a cup of chocolate. And so I said, Anatoly, will you please sit down a minute? He said, sure. I said, well, a couple of times you told me you don't know where we are. I said, I think you do. You know. He said, how do you know that? I said, I'll tell you how I know it. Because we arrived here at 2 o'clock in the morning, raining, and the mayor happened to be out there with just a number of cars that we needed. That's just what we needed, 4 cars for the press and for me. And I said, I want you to know I'm the mayor of a city too. And I don't go out to the airport and wait out there all night in case somebody comes in at 2 o'clock in the morning to give them a ride into town. I said, now, you better treat me as having some intelligence. So he kind of grinned. He says, well, yeah, he says, we're in Karshi. I says, well, I don't know anything about Karshi, but we'll find out. And I found out on the way out to the plane that morning, we passed a valley. There must have been 800 fighter planes down there. There must have been. Just the place was conglomerated. It was just filled with small fighter planes. And I said, I don't blame you. I said, but don't, you know, you can always get caught in a lie.
A lot of politicians do.
Well, yes, but I mean, he was trying to defend his, protect his country, but I got incensed because he was trying to delude me, too.
You had a diplomatic mission that I think involved De Gaulle or Konrad Adenauer.
How about Dave Zimmerman?
Dave, he's too bright.
What about Walt Gustafson?
Walt died last night.
How about Frank Monahan?
What about George Gale?
Frank ain't a citizen, and George is in jail.
We could run out Wallenstein.
He's only 23.
What about Ed Peterson?
You idiot! That's me!
Politics and poker, politics and poker, playing for a pot that's mediocre. Politics and poker, running neck and neck. If politics seems more predictable, that's